welcome to the X-Wing segment of the Wide World of Wargaming podcast. I am, as always, your host, Vincent Morgado, joined by the irascible Jeff Wilder and the man behind the strings, Drew Bishop. Gentlemen, how are we?
I'm well.
Doing excellent.
So, Jeff, you and me had a fairly exciting weekend. I was fortunate enough to participate. That was my first ever official X-Wing tournament.
Just a basic tournament?
I went to small in-store events, you know, like wave championships and things like that, but nothing. I'd never been to a trial, and I still have yet to go to a system open, so I consider this to my first real X-Wing tournament.
Oh, this one was formal tier, so that's a good cutoff point. The next highest is premier. But the other ones that you've been to are official. They're organized play tournaments.
Okay. I have not done particularly well at those events because I generally write list the morning of and then just kind of go with the flow and see whatever happens. This one I actually prepared pretty well for. I've been flying majority X-Wing lists for the last couple weeks. And then they added my favorite U-Wing pilot 48 hours before the tournament, and I absolutely took advantage of that. For those wondering, Cassian Andor is really good.
I just wanted to double check, because I know that obviously we have listeners that aren't from California or very possibly the United States. The tournament you're referring to, Vince, was a hyperspace qualifier, is that correct?
Correct. It was the Game Castle Santa Clara hyperspace trial.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't like, you know, oh man, you went to a basic 3-round tournament and
did
really well.
No, this was not a 1-day event, but it was 6 rounds with a cut of top 16.
I mean, 68 players, right?
58.
Oh, okay.
But they went with the top 16 unless we had anyone who was going to make the cut at 3-3, and then they were going to go to top 8.
And there were 5 of us at 4-2 that did not make the cut, including Drew.
My fiance. This is correct.
Matt Sherry still had a pretty good day, including decapitating Jeff one-on-one.
I'll be honest with you, Jeff. She didn't even tell me what happened to Han. I found out about that like third hand, and I literally like screamed. I was like, what?
We can talk about it later, but I saw it coming 3 turns before it happened, and there was nothing I could do about it. It's like a slow-moving avalanche.
Oh, my, is it the snowball effect? You're just like, oh, gosh.
There was no way. Once I was in a certain position, there was just no way with her positioning and the fact that she's so experienced, there was no way for me to get out of it.
Oh, man. I had a little bit of the opposite effect, I'll be honest with you. She was sending me photos. Well, I guess we'll get into it. Let's move on, Vince.
No, let's get into it. That's what we wanted to talk about was, you know, the previous tournament. We're here to talk about competitive events and lists, so let's do it. Drew, do you, you know, ask away?
Sure, away. So I'll be honest with you. I actually didn't know that, Vince, you made top 4 until I saw the top 4 image, and then I had to change my pants because I was like, oh my god, Vince, actually, well, that's so cool. Like, what, you know. And I, obviously we were talking before the podcast, but I want to know, what were you flying? And, you know, did you have any, like, super rough matchups? Or, you know, did you play the 3 Y-Wing, U-Wing, like, monster killer? I also heard there were 5 Y-Wings around. I think that, to me, those 2 styles of lists are, you know, the best. But I'll be honest with you, I didn't realize that, 4-ship Rebel survived from 1.0 and has reared its ugly head in 2.0. Vince, please enlighten me.
Okay, so my list was very bare. This was a very bare bones list for the most part. It was Wedge with Swarm Tactics, 2 Red Squadron X-Wings with Selfless, and then Cassian Andor on a U-Wing with Trickshot, Leia, Tactical Officer, and the pivot wing.
And no S-foils on the X-Wings because there's not enough points.
Yeah, it's funny. All the X-Wings had S-foils, obviously, okay. Because I'm not an idiot. So I had trouble with 2 lists, and they were hilariously the 2 lists that met at the top 10. My only 2 losses were to first and second place. So as far as, you know, who I lost to, I think the record speaks for itself. I lost to Luke, Two Wise, and a Partisan, and I lost to Luminara, Jag, Wolf, and a 104th Battalion ARC 170.
Oh, Sherry lost that same list, too.
That was the list where I really went into that game thinking there was no hope for me, because X-Wings really can't outturn ARC 170s. The dials are almost identical. A smaller base, but they have the same number of dice, more if you count the rear arc, and they have half again as much health. So
yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say, is that your K-turns and talon rolls like don't do much when
right.
They can just keep moving forward and then shoot you out the booty.
Especially when you're dealing with Wolf, who, for those who don't know his rule yet, he has a charge, a non-regenerating charge that when he spends it, he's allowed to reroll an attack die from his front arc, and when he recovers it, he adds a die to his rear arc attack. So he can very easily get four die attacks at range one out the back. And this guy was running veteran tail gunner on all three arcs. And let me tell you something, you do not know what a surprise is until you talon roll behind one of these things and get punched in the mouth by a target lock focused four die rear arc shot, which deleted one of my red squads. So that list, I don't think I really had any chance of beating. Realistically, I don't think there was any way out of that game for me. The other one that I was worried about was a double fire spray Fett and Amon list, only because I have a supernatural fear of Boba Fett, and with good reason. I've beat him a handful of times out of probably 20 games against him. He's insanely good, and he shreds X-Wings. I was able to range control against him this time a lot better than I normally do, and Cassian let me keep talon rolling so that I was able to stay in the side arcs of the two fire sprays instead of getting behind them or in front of them. So that was probably the best game I've ever flown, was the one against the double fire sprays.
I flew a really good game against that same list. That was my best game of the day as well.
I'm very proud of how I played this weekend. It's a lot smarter and more patient than I normally do. I'm pretty notorious among the people I play with for flying absolutely insane. The nice thing is that Cassian lets you do that because you just remove the stress at the top of the next turn.
Oh god, and you had Leia too, right?
And I had Leia.
Oh.
So it was I was keeping my actions up. I found this to be the case. If I'm not bumping with more than one ship, I'm probably coming out of that turn ahead just on the number of dice I have access to and the fact that I have better maneuverability than the majority of lists that I faced.
And Wedge's ability as well is also... Like, I mean, you look at everything in hyperspace, and obviously there are a few contenders with him, but when it comes to raw damage output, I think he's one of, if not the best.
I consistently have said, and I've found very few people who disagree with me, the three best damage dealers in hyperspace are Wedge, Vader, and Boba Fett.
I would say so too.
I do think Han is up there, but on the other hand, Han also costs a ton.
Well, not only that, similar to the Fett.
But I mean, the problem with Han is he can certainly dish it, but he can't take it, right? Like, and I suppose, you know, you can argue that Vader couldn't take it. I mean, the third die, the three evade dice, like, really help him. But, you know, obviously the lack of the evade action. But yeah, I think Han, out of all of those, you know, definitely suffers the most as far as defense goes, right? Because, like, you know, you can't, like, in 1.0, Han could punch things so hard and then, you know, have the defensive mods on the return shot, but now he doesn't have those defensive mods. I mean, technically, I guess he has rerolls, right, or has the potential for them, but
So Lando gives good defense. R2-D2 gives good shield regeneration, although you're worth 8 points personally, but the big thing is that unlike in 1.0, Han doesn't need to be at range one, because if he gets a trick shot off, he's throwing four dice from whatever range. That's pretty good when you've got a reroll and potentially...
And a focus, generally.
Right.
Yeah. Assuming you get a boost.
Times had a target lock, but because I had, you know, a tactical officer, but generally a focus at four dice, and of course you have the all dice reroll.
What is Han's thing? It's not, I don't believe in luck, it's the, whatever. Han believes in luck, and Han's just lucky as hell.
Fact.
But Jeff, what was your list?
Oh, I was flying, as it sounds, I had the same experience with the U-Wing. My favorite U-Wing pilot was released 2 days before, or whatever it was. But my favorite U-Wing pilot is Heftober.
He's very good. He got a lot of run at the Toronto System Open in Extended.
He's perfectly positioned with his init to get his ability off, which, you know, when you've got... focus, target lock, tactical officer. You can make a lot of use of that ability. And yet he's a net two, which means that when he goes up against the barrack swarms, he is at least going to get a return attack. So that's
right,
kind
before
of
important. Before being removed. Or, you know.
So it was Hef with tactical officer and Leia. A hull upgrade, because you guys know I love my odd hit points, which mattered a lot, by the way. Blue Squadron pilot with fire control system, jamming beam, because why not?
Because free.
Han Solo with trick shot, Lando Calrissian, R2-D2, and a completely wasted Millennium Falcon title. I don't know what I was thinking with that. It was a wasted 6 points.
Yeah,
I don't believe that I ever used it.
I mean, when you have Lando, right? Like,
when you have Han's ability, because Millennium Falcon allows you to reroll and evade. If you're evading, if you already have an evade token, which I almost always will because of Lando, it will allow you to reroll a green die. But the thing about that is, adders in cases where you're already rolling more than one green die and you've rolled one evade, so you don't want to roll both green dice.
Right.
Never happened in my game. Certainly nowhere near 6 points worth in any game. So, but it was a pretty... I've since reworked it to something that I think is better, but I enjoyed flying it, and I did. So, and it was different, you know, there's no, obviously it's Rebels with Leia, and that was the theme of the tournament.
Yes.
But there's no other Han Solo. I wasn't sure. I'm not even sure there was another Falcon there. A Falcon.
I think there were a couple other ones.
And I'm looking at List Fortress, and I'm just doing a basic Control F search, and I'm not seeing another. But I could be missing something.
No, it's possible I'm wrong. I thought I saw a couple others, but maybe they dropped early or something and just their lists never got added.
There was only one other Heftober. He didn't do well. A squadron with blue squadron pilots in it. He didn't do very well. So considering what I was flying, I was pretty happy to finish 20th. And I easily could have made the cut. And more importantly, if I had flown better in the two games that I did lose.
Jeff, since you have that up, can you check if I was the only person running Cassian?
Oh, sure.
Because I'm not... He is not generally a pilot I've heard a lot of people talk about.
No, you are the only one running Cassian.
Yeah, people keep mentioning, you know, I was going to run him with B-Wings. And I go, I understand why people do that. Because, you know, you want to run Braylon and have him every turn going, you know, having a barrel roll focus or take a red maneuver and get his rerolls. But a lot of times a U-Wing can outrun B-Wings because it is a faster ship and it's on a larger base. And if those three stay together, they bump into each other all the time. I've run U-Wings and B-Wings together. One of my original lists was Luke in a U-Wing with two B-Wings. And it's beefy, but there's no room for them to maneuver around each other. Even with Leia, there's just not enough... They stay too close, and you bonk. And it just gets out of hand.
I mean, you know, the really, really good positioners can do it. You know, my first ever regional, I was running a large ship and two B-Wings. So I got really good at keeping those, and I did well in that regional. But I did really good at keeping those together, and those skills haven't really atrophied. So I'm actually pretty good at it. But I mean, veterans are a good call just because I think that the three Talon roll is such a strong maneuver.
It's a clearance maneuver and it's a reposition, is what I think makes the Talon roll so good. I literally Talon rolled around the outside of a prox mine, and it fit perfectly around the shape of it.
Right.
It was like...
One Talon roll is basically just, you know, staying in the same place.
Yeah, a one Talon roll is something you... I almost think it's better at high initiative with a one Talon.
I mean, it's awfully easy to get blocked.
Right. I suppose it would depend on the, you know, again, right, the placement of the ships, the situation. But, you know, if you engage sideways and you Talon roll with almost anything, or be Fenn with a two Talon roll, the B-Wing with a one Talon roll, or the X-Wing or T-70 with the three Talon roll, you know, you're deploying yourself more sideways, right? Which, you know, depending on engagement, can mean you don't get shot at. Like, you get a free shot, right? And you're facing them now.
That was the biggest thing that I found with the X-Wings and Cassian, was that even if I didn't Leia, if I wanted to, I could Talon roll with one of the X-Wings, pull the stress off, and immediately coordinate him at whatever order I wanted, instead of having to wait for him to take a blue maneuver. So it just gave me a lot more flexibility of when to use my coordinates and when to take my actions.
You can surprise people with that too. That's actually very deadly.
Yeah, because people look and go, can I see your dial? Oh, hey, here are his blues. This is what he can and can't do. Top of activation, yoink, let me eat this stress token. Here's a three hard, have fun.
Yeah, a lot of the games on Echo Base X-Wing, shout out to them.
I love that channel.
They're great. Kevin and Jake are amazing. But yeah, a lot of their matches have a lot of X-Wings, you know, T-70s and T-65s. And they always constantly talk about, like, oh, okay, you know, K-turns, right, Talon rolls, got to do the blue maneuvers. But with Cassian, you know, all of a sudden, the dial is completely open, which is crazy. But, I mean, Leia does the same thing, right? So
Leia does the same thing, but you keep your stress. So you're limited on the turn after again.
The turn after,
whereas
right.
With Cassian, you can just keep doing it. I had this great sequence against a Merrick Steele, where I Talon rolled around him and then 4K'd behind him on the following turn. And he tried, and the guy one banked because he thought that I was going to have to overshoot. Except I just 4K'd and blew him away with four dice.
I think that's the thing. I'm not sure what you mean by Leia. You keep your stress. You don't gain the stress with Leia.
No. But if you red maneuver, if there are people who love to do back-to-back red maneuvers with Leia...
Gotcha. Yeah, that's the thing that Cassian allows. Is the
right.
Back-to-back.
Cassian allows you to go back-to-back-to-back, which gets out of hand.
Well, hold on. So not only that, but Cassian is also a surprise, right? So if you K-turn with a ton of your ships, right? You know, Cassian can pull the stress off of one of them, right?
Yes.
So, and that sort of thing... Right, like obviously Leia, you use it at the beginning of the round before you move, so you can, like, you know, your opponent at that point is like, oh, you spent Leia, it's gonna happen. Whereas with Cassian, you know, you put your dials down, and oh wait, does Cassian go at the?
He is
beginning
also
of the
beginning
round
of activation.
Dang it! I'm
but
sorry,
he is
I'm,
selective. Meaning,
I'm just a noob.
Well, he's not a known pilot. There's not a lot of people running him because he wasn't hyperspace legal. And he's not like a direct effect U-Wing like a Benthic or a Saw or even a Magva, really.
Or an Allen Wrench.
And honestly, there's a weird effect where his crew card is so hard to understand. People just think they have an aversion to Cassian.
His card is so weird.
It's really hard to understand. So
I've never even heard of anyone using it.
I mean, I've heard of people playing around with it, but everybody that I've ever seen use it has messed it up.
Yeah.
No, I would love to play it. I know I'd mess it up at some point. I'd be like, wait, how does that work? And I'd screw it up, so I stay away from it.
Yeah, it's either the exact opposite. It's either that or like the exact opposite, right? Where you're like, okay, you know, decent player comes in and like knows exactly where you're going, but because you already knew exactly where they were going, Cassian doesn't actually do anything for you because you already chose the best maneuver, right? Like, I feel like there's very little play in there to like change your maneuver if you already guessed correctly what they were doing.
Well, at the very least, you still get to see what they're doing. So,
right.
But yeah,
I get it.
What I think is, I like his card, and what I want to say to that, Drew, is that what he kind of lets you do is, if you have a 50-50 split of what you're almost positive somebody's going to do, you set your dial to counter one of them, and then you Cassie in the other one.
Right, and you can make sure that you have those two outs.
And then you reset it, and he can't get away.
Right.
It's a cool card if you're that kind of predictive, but if you're not, like me, it's not good for you.
Yeah, I mean, pulling stress is... let's be fair. I think that's one of the best things that, you know, an ability can do, right? Like,
yeah, and I mean, it's hard to say if there's a better support ship across the board than the U-Wing in terms of what all its pilots can do. The only comparable one, I think, is probably the Lambda.
I don't think there's a better support ship as long as Leia's at 2.
I'm just looking strictly at pilot skills.
Yeah, the U-Wing is fine, but it's only fine. It's the fact that it's a 3-die gun on a medium base with decent health that can carry Leia. And the last part is the part that matters.
Right. The fact that it can also it's basically like a turret. You can stick it down somewhere, and then with Leia... Right. Not only can you do that, you can turn in any direction. But yeah, it's 3 dice that you're always going to have. And when you add on to the fact that, you know, the rest of your ships can K-turn while the U-Wing sits and blocks, or like, you know, is basically a, hey, you need to get around me in order to continue to play the game.
Yeah.
A lot of people. Well, I don't know if like higher level X-Wing players, but wing, you know, gets that 4-die shot. Oh, look, I rolled, you know, slightly above average, and there's the extra 2 or 3 damage I needed to wipe you off the board.
Well, let me, if it drew a lot of that cut out, but I'm going to jump in just on the end of it. I played a guy local, I won't mention his name, there's no need, in round 6, who brought the Resistance T-70 Aces. So Poe, Nien, and Ello. And there was 2 shots that really turned that game where it ended up being, you know, I dominated him pretty much the entire game. He made a good comeback at the end, but really the game started pulling away from him early. I had he left Nien numb in front of Cassian at range 1, and Cassian rolled double hit, double crit, natties. And there's no X-Wing in the game that can take that standing up.
Seems good.
Seems legit.
Yep. I mean, I've always said that about Force users. Like, that's how you take them down. You just roll more attack dice than they have evade dice. And then Force doesn't matter because you're still going to push damage through.
Yeah.
Just to check, you're still going to do a thing about how you hate dice, right?
At the end. That was, you know, my dice that game were fairly good. but only on the offensive end. I couldn't roll evades all weekend. It didn't happen ever. Like, I just got away with mostly having more hull and more dice than the other guy.
Oh, that's mighty selfless of you, Vince.
Eh, you know, if you've got paint, you might as well swap it, right?
You've got Four-Ship Rebel, you might as well.
Yeah, I mean, I brought, let's see, 18. I brought 26 hull. I'm pretty sure I got the most out of all of it.
Oh, so good. I have beef with the supposed Rebel beef. I wound up winning. What was the winning list?
The Rebel beef, the winner was Luke, Horton, a gold squad, and a partisan.
Blue Squadron Scout.
Blue Squadron Scout. No, it was a partisan.
No. You're right. It is a partisan.
Yeah. I lost to him. I remember.
The Blue Squadron Scout. Yeah.
That was the winning list.
That's awesome. I don't understand.
He must have flown his ass off. I have no idea how he won with that list.
It's a lot of meat, man. And Horton starts... When those rerolls with Horton are landing... And look, you can't not... I made the mistake of going right for Luke because I made the mistake of thinking that was the damage dealer in his list. It's not. It's Horton.
Well, I mean, Luke is very survivable unless you're like, you know, unless every ship in your list is shooting at Luke or, what is it? You've got like torpedoes or like a bomb or something. But Luke, I think Luke is one of the harder ones to kill, especially because of his ability.
You don't ever do 3 damage to him. Like, you, more often than not, yep. You do 1. Is kind of the way it is with Luke.
Yeah.
Like, the only time I ever put real damage through on him was 1 range, 1 shot with Wedge because he got really aggressive with a boost. That's what happens when you go to range 1 against Wedge. Good luck.
What other questions you got for us, Drew?
So I know that Vince kind of already mentioned it, but like, Jeff, what was your like toughest matchup? Like, what were you guys afraid of seeing?
Tie Swarm.
I mean, I knew that the game against Sherry, the Inferno Squadron, would be tough. That ended up being my toughest game. Sherry just outflew me, did nothing wrong in that game, and ended up forcing Han off the board. Han was damaged, but still forcing Han off the board. And I saw it coming because I made a mistake in positioning pretty early. Saw it coming 3 turns before it happened, but couldn't do anything about it. There was nothing that I could move that I could make that she didn't have blocked. So I was slowly being herded into the corner, and eventually I couldn't, there was a 2-turn would not get me free.
Right. And then of course they don't have, the YTs don't have the 3-turn, right?
The 3-turn, if a 2-turn won't get you free on
the 3-turn won't either.
Will not. There are certain situations where it will, but usually not. But really, the one that I was most afraid of was Brandon Carey's list. He was first in Swiss.
As usual.
And that was one where I don't really know why I gave him the joust that he kind of wanted. Our offense and defense. I gave him the joust that he wanted, and he spread the damage around the way that Biggs and selfless Braylon Stram does. You know, I limited his ability to use Leia pretty well, but for the most part, he chose where we engaged, and I let him have it for some stupid reason, and that was the one that I was afraid. He had Wedge. And Wedge against Han is brutal. That's when Han has no defense.
That's 3 damage every turn.
Yeah.
There's
Wedge
no defense
melts.
Han has Han has tokens, but Han doesn't have dice to apply the tokens to.
Yeah,
so,
and you can't reroll nothing.
Right. So I was afraid of that game. The one that I wasn't afraid of, and I ended up playing really well against, was a Luke Wedge Dutch all protons list. And I range controlled that one and won it pretty handily. I didn't really have a lot of fear against anything except Wedge, and I ended up facing Wedge twice, which sucked. I went 1-1. I did face two double fire sprays, including one guy who had a Hav, which it's weird he's got a Hav and not Seavor, but as it turned out, a Hav against a medium ship and a large ship is a really good mining build tie.
A Hav is a very good ability. He's fast enough. The way I've seen him played a few times by people running mining guild ties, he's easily fast enough to stay behind you, and if he has to, he'll 4K over or he'll 3K over the top of you, and then he doesn't need to focus because he's got four dice.
Right. Well, luckily I flew really well in that game. I managed to isolate and kill a Hav pretty easily with trick shots.
Yeah.
So that went pretty well. The Fett and Eamon list that I faced, I did well with. That was my best game. It was like 223, my final game, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which very briefly gave me hope of making the cut, but alas, was not to be. But that guy with the Hav, for final salvo. I've never had a final salvo before. I don't play, it's not going to engage games the way that a lot of competitive players apparently do. So I've never had a full list versus full list final salvo. And then I've just never had a tie game. But this guy, I figured the odds after it was a 150-1. I don't kill his, what was it? I don't kill his Eamon. It's half points on Han. Han had two shots modified with focus. Eight dice, rolled one hit and seven blanks.
Oh my gosh.
Well, keep everybody, stick a pin in that. We're going to have Jeff come talk about it later.
Yeah. I thought he had won, when he got half points on Han and I didn't kill his ship. But it ended up being 104-104 and I outgunned him 6-3 in final salvo dice. It was a good tournament. I could have, if I had flown better, I would have made the cut with the list. Well, you know, you beat one person and then your whole...
Everything changes. Yep.
Vincent might have ended up 40th. if I'd won that game.
I mean, Jeff, I'm pretty sure if you had won that round, Vince would have wound up in 40th.
Wait, what?
So
it was a joke.
What's going on here? What about matchups? I'm a big believer, Drew. Just this is a common phrase in a lot of things, but I really not often hear it attached to X-Wing. Styles make fights. So for the boxing fans out there, respect. The list that I was really, really afraid of was the 5Ys, because I know from experience, 3 X-Wings and a U-Wing will not chew through that fast enough before it either gets to me or ionizes me and then flies around in circles on me. I'm lucky that I never ran into it. I'm very happy that I didn't run into it because it would have torn me to pieces. But there were enough... It looks like there were enough double fire spray lists out there that if anybody ran 5Ys, they didn't get very far.
Yeah, I saw them.
He did fairly well. The one guy who had it.
There was only one.
Only one that I saw.
That many Y-wings at that tournament. There was only one 5Y list. That's interesting.
I saw it earlier facing the 5 A-Wings, and they just kind of like that flew around the table together.
It was a very interesting game, watching about the last, 10 minutes of that.
Yeah, I was expecting those to be higher placed, but
He
from
got
watching
18th, and he is pretty new to the game,
Yeah.
so.
Oh, I wasn't at the tournament. I was working, but you quote unquote working, being on my phone like every half hour or so, getting updates from my love. She was sending me photos of like setup and then engagements. Her and I get pretty wiped out, and we have a hard time, especially me, like kind of like remembering what happened, especially now with like working me so much. And so she played two people who made the cut, which was awesome. And the one thing that I was interested in, I thought that the five Ys and the five A wings were gonna place higher. But upon hearing about how many U-wings, X-wings, and like how many Selfless was going around, it seemed like they weren't they I didn't think that they were gonna place that high, and then I guess it was true.
The A-wings, like the 5As versus 5Ys, the A-wings played a patient game, and then to the final 20 minutes or so made a significant positioning mistake. After 20 minutes, or with only 20 minutes left, because of this positioning mistake, having to joust 5Y-wings.
Oof.
But to be fair, he didn't lose a single one.
Did it.
He didn't lose any
So
of the
five white
A-wings. I didn't see him lose any of them, I don't think.
wings. He did. He just lost one. That the
Okay.
game ended up 41-20, I think.
That sounds
So he
about
lo
right.
I think he lost Zari. I think he lost Zari.
Right, and then he half-healthed
A Y-wing.
one of the grays.
Yeah, but can you imagine? I mean, you're in A-wings and you end up having to joust 5 Y-wings because, it was just an unfortunate positioning mistake. He, this newer player that just marched down the edge of the board, very, very slowly, just didn't cut over in time. And when he did try to cut over, he made some boosting and positioning mistakes. So.
Tends to happen with those A-wings, even with me.
A-wings
I just
are.
don't understand. I don't really understand why you're flying A-wings and don't need to be in formation.
Yep, and
Yeah,
that's
that's
actually
odd.
that's one of the worst things that I just discovered this over the last couple of days, and talking with people about the hyperspace event that just happened with you guys and all that. And I that's what I do. I've been flying my A's in formation, and it's eye-opening. But I'm interested in trying some new stuff out this week. I'm excited. But yeah, no, it was cool. So Cherry flew the Tie Swarm. She went 4-2. She placed 21st. She was one of the five 4-2s that didn't make it.
I gave her a lot of crap for spanking me so hard and then finishing under me in the rankings.
Oh,
I
well,
told her
no.
she should have just scooped. Just scooped.
Yeah, no, it's
I would
It brings
have
up it brings up something that is not commonly talked about nowadays, which is fatigue over playing so many rounds, and in
Especially with
her,
Tide Form.
especially with a six ship list. Yeah, her final her engagements with oh my gosh, Daniel Lim,
Second place,
on the
Daniel Lim.
second place,
Three
Daniel
arcs.
Lim. Yep.
Three arcs and the Luminara.
All of the veteran turret gunners that Vince was talking about earlier.
Yep.
She came. She got antsy, came into the rocks, and engaged. I think three or two of her ties were gonna go over debris on the next round, like after engaging. And when she sent me the photo, I was I had to pull I deliver for USPS. I kind of like pulled over in the car, and I was like, no, I like screamed because I saw that, and I was like,
No!
the game was over. And then of course, two turns later, probably about 15, 20 minutes later, she sent me a photo, and she was like, I'm done. And there were three ties left on the board, and he still had everything. And I was like, yeah, that's That's it. But the one thing that we talked about most was, you know, being exhausted, being like not ready, right? Hungry, thirsty, right? Like your body isn't in a proper state of mind to like play this fun competitive game.
So I want to apologize to everyone I've ever made fun of who plays X-Wing and how elitist I have been at times about the tournament experience difference between X-Wing and 40K. It's not equivalent, I will maintain, but it is getting close. It's less, it requires more of your brain power to maintain the ability to adapt to that many lists, but it's different from wielding control over armies the size of 40K. So I started feeling fatigue like mid round 5, and I felt myself tilt and had to physically walk from the table for like a solid minute after putting down my dials to get myself back under composure. I felt it coming and I had to get away and just take a minute. So
you and your 6-round opponent were pretty testy with each other there at the beginning.
I sometimes will say things out loud. I will sometimes think out loud. And he took one of my thoughts out loud as a declaration. And I made no move to actually go through with it and went to continue with my original thought. And he objected to that. That's what happened. And we ended up kind of getting through it. So I hope we parted well from that round. I hold no ill will.
I will say you guys did seem to have gotten through it. I will say that if there's a dispute whether or not you landed on an obstacle, one player shouldn't give in. The game actually has a rule for it. If there's a genuine dispute, roll a die.
And I would have been, more often than not, I think that people should take that solution. But this is a problem that a lot of gaming has, is that people would rather hand the buck off and, you know, let somebody else piss the other guy off than have it go to a die roll. And I think that's just people trying to avoid conflict.
Well, there's a reason for that, too. Ian Hamp actually talked about this a couple weeks ago on the Minoc podcast about people being antsy and nervous about not having enough time to finish the match if they have to call a judge over. And the one thing that Ian, you know, always mentions, and I've begun to, like, you know, believe this as well, is, you know, you call a judge over and just let them know, hey, we spent, you know, 2 minutes waiting for you, right? Like, can we get a time extension?
The time,
and there's almost never, it's never a problem to give a time extension, especially in those, you know, higher round games where, like, you know, your win could put you into the cut or not, you know.
Unfortunately, this wasn't a situation that a judge could have solved, because this was a, you nudged it when you landed the maneuver, no, I didn't, situation.
Oh.
And those are the situations where the only fair solution
is, is
to roll a die.
Exactly.
If one person has to give in, basically what you have is you have either the more obstinate or the bigger asshole winning the dispute.
Jeff, yeah, was this the asteroid call? And I think I lost that one, didn't I?
Oh, you won that one. He gave you that one. Which was kind of surprised me, because the player you were playing against is pretty obstinate. But you won that call.
I said
you guys really should roll a die in a situation like that. Nobody should be forced to give in.
Oh, Jeff, admitting that you broke the tournament rules on a podcast. You're awesome, my friend. I love you.
After it was settled, you know, it was.
Oh, okay.
Like,
okay. Yeah.
You know,
nope.
Yeah.
100%. No, I would do the same thing in a situation like that too.
Yeah. There's,
if he had said, "Let's roll for it," I would have been on board. Because that's what I'm used to. That's how I'm used to solving most disputes. But so, you know, it's one thing for him to say, "Hey, man, you bumped that." It's another thing for him to say, "I think you bumped that. Let's roll for it." If you come with me with two different statements, I'm going to respond in two different ways. One's an accusation. One's a, hey, let's, you know, Let's not make this a big deal. Let's just die it out and we'll go for it.
So I see now, Vince, why you're so good at X-Wing. You use your power of tilting to tilt yourself into the top cup.
I mean, listen, my Facebook chat name is the salt-powered robot for a reason. I'll put it to you this way. Psychological warfare is not new to me.
It was a well-run tournament. I want to give a shout-out to Luke and to Rick.
Yeah.
It went long, but that is just what tournaments do.
I was nervous when you guys started at 11:45. I was like, oh no, it's going to be a day.
They did a really good job. They were upbeat. They were, they were attentive. They did a really great job.
Well, Rick is always my favorite party guy at tournaments. He's the one person I can always hang out with, and like we can just, oh my god, we can laugh and laugh and never get tired. And even when we're tired, we're just like, I feel like we're the hyenas from The Lion King, just like laughing hysterically in the corner, you know. When we all like scrubbed out and just like, yeah, it's great. I love them.
That was me, Rick, and Ben Smith for about 30 seconds watching one of the semi-final games. I don't remember what we were talking about, but we all just started busting up laughing, and then we had to realize, hey, there's people actually like playing competitively like right now. We should stop.
Actually, you shouldn't. Nobody minds. I think that the idea of laughter. Big space. I think it's a good thing. I think that tournament was good natured pretty much the entire way through. And sometimes at the bigger tournaments, that's not always the case, you know?
Right.
So yeah, don't keep yourself from laughing. Obviously you weren't laughing at people.
No, we weren't.
You know, one thing I do want to say is that there was a mistake made that I had to bring to the attention. I had to actually send a player to the judge to fix. So just to make sure everybody's aware, game in X-Wing, which is completely allowed and, in fact, encouraged. If you have no chance in the game, they say, you know, it's good sportsmanship to concede when you have no chance at all. Obviously, B is a factor. You can play for every ounce of MOV you want, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. But, you know, in this particular case, a player had conceded to another player after they were down to one ship each. And they reported their score as 200-0.
Whoa, it
was not intentional. It was a mistake. Oh, okay.
So
they just didn't know.
Yeah, that's actually a holdover from a lot of other games. X-Wing is very different from the majority of tabletop that I've played, where if you concede, you keep your MOV. A lot of games that as soon as you scoop, you've surrendered any option at keeping scoring. You're done.
But you're correct. In X-Wing, the points you have destroyed stay destroyed.
Right. That may have just been complete inexperience.
Oh, it wasn't an experience.
I thought it was you when if you could see you give them the full 200 and you get nothing.
You give them the full 200, but you keep the points that you destroyed.
Right.
Huh. Interesting. I totally well. Oh boy.
Oh, So
Jeff, you requested 5 minutes to talk about a subject we're all familiar with, and one of us will be following you with his own little... Well, I won't be following, but I am going to enjoy this. Go ahead, right. Jeff. You wanted to talk about variants.
Okay, so anybody who's listening to this is probably at least a semi-competitive X-Wing player who listens to some other podcast. I know it's hard to believe, but there are other podcasts out there.
We love you, Minox.
These podcasts will often say things like, it is disrespectful to complain about your dice. They'll also say things like, you should remove as much variance from the game as you can, and so on. I want to go on the record as saying that I believed for a long time, and that is that variance is good for X-Wing. Out of luck, and in my opinion, as a semi-pro professional, or a semi-pro poker player, an X-Wing player, my opinion is that the sweet spot for the amount of luck, 25%. In a game with decent lists facing each other, nobody really makes mistakes, but one player is better than the other player, the less skilled player should have a small chance, somewhere in the vicinity of 20-25%, win the game. All right? That's good for X-Wing because he comes back to a game, cannot win against a better player. And almost any player that's been playing longer than you in a game as complex as X-Wing is going to be a better player. If you just keep getting beat and beat and beat, as you will at the tail end of 1E, when there's almost no variance left in the game, you simply cannot player at the tail end of 1E when you're rolling dice and they're only pretending to roll dice. You cannot win. That is a bad game. It's why X-Wing had to be rebooted. The other thing that I want to say, and I know that's controversial, variance is good for the game, but I am sticking with it. You cannot convince me otherwise. The other thing that I want to say is that it is not disrespectful to say, "Oh, God, I got really unlucky in that game." As long as you're not also saying Ed only average or worse than average, unlucky and lost to you. Takes a you have to be able to look at a game like X-Wing in which randomness is a factor. You have to be able to look at it and determine where are the windows of variance this game from what we would otherwise expect? The reason that you have to be able to do that is because if you don't, you'll discard a list after you lose with a list. Not able to say, well, I lost with this list because of these three windows of high variance. Then you assume that the list is bad and you get rid of it. Or, even worse, if you're not able to look at a game and say, I won with this list because I was incredibly on fire with my offense and my defensive dice, think that that list is the best list that can never be beat. And obviously both of those things are not conducive to building a list that you enjoy flying, that you want to fly for a while to get practiced with it. So the ability to objectively recognize variance in a game, even saying as objective recognition of variance in a game, that is not disrespectful to your opponent. And frankly, any opponent who thinks that you saying, oh my God, that was so unlucky, is disrespectful to them, is an idiot. And I will, if that ever got back to me, that somebody thought I was being disrespectful to them because I mentioned that it was a 150-to-1 shot, lost 100 points of MOV, I will tell them to their face, you're an idiot. That's disrespectful.
Oh, Jeff, one here has any question that if you want to disrespect somebody, you'll be able to.
Exactly.
Can I jump in, Jeff? Or do you have a conclusion? That's
basically it. The main podcast about don't complain about your dice. It's okay to complain about your dice as long as you don't whine and as long as you're not telling somebody they suck.
I've heard this mentioned in a couple X-Wing areas by people. I don't know any of them personally. I've never met most of these people. they don't strike me as super top flight players, because anyone who plays a game of random results will know when they lost a game because their dice failed them at the wrong time. You're right. You have to be able to objectively evaluate the mistakes you made, but also the decisions you made that were correct, and that target lock focus you had on four dice only gave you two hits when it, by odds, should have given you four. It's very easy to say fly better, and I don't mean to reference anyone. It's very easy to say play better, get good. The get good is a stupid thing to say in most circumstances. If I pull a maneuver that gives me an unmodified range one with wedge shot on somebody, and I roll triple blank focus, that's not my fault. I was in the proper position, out of arc, at the best possible range for that moment. My dice let me down. I can't fly any better than being out of arc, on your flank, at range one. If I roll four blanks, that's the dice, that's not my skill. My skill was being in that position. So I flew correctly. And I don't care what anybody says about, well, you should have had a No. Wrong. All of us have to make sacrifices in this game, and that's where the variance comes in. Sometimes you have to choose between having a modified shot where you might take a return and an unmodified one where you're safe. And that's called a decision-making. And that's not skill, that's estimating risk. These are different things. And people need to understand that. There's a difference between evaluating risk and, dare I say, getting lucky.
And there is a difference between that happening to you once in a game, where it is unlucky, but it's not game breaking. But if that happens to you three times in a game,
there's no coming back. There's very little coming back from it.
There's no coming back from it. That is a game changing. When this happened to me in the hairspray list, where I thought I had lost because of this 150 to 1 swing, I thought I had lost. What I said was, "Oh my God, that is a game changing turn. That completely changed the game from me being well ahead to me having lost." And it wasn't disrespectful to my opponent. My opponent was playing well. It was just a 150-to-1 shot that happened. And I remark on it because I'm good at figuring odds, you know? When that sort of thing happens to you, you've got four red dice into a ship, a TIE fighter with one hit point left, unmodified. Three times you have that shot on it, and you can't kill the TIE fighter. That is a game. That's a game changing.
Especially if that.
And there's nothing wrong with remarking on game changing variants.
Especially if the variance snowballs.
It will. I mean, that's what happens. And it doesn't even, the thing about it is, it doesn't even have to be, has this adjunct web program called Lady Luck, right? You can feed your Vassal log into Lady Luck, and it'll tell you, well, how many evades did you roll, and how many evades did he roll, and how unlucky was it, and so forth. And that was great. I remember when it was introduced, and that's great. The thing about it is, it looks at the whole game. Most of the game, 80% of the game, the variance is average and just doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Better positioning in average rolls, the better positioning will land damage or evade damage. There are windows of variance where it matters. I had the better positioning here. I was rolling five green dice. He was rolling two red dice. He rolled two crits. I rolled five blanks. that matters. The opposite doesn't matter. He rolls two hits and I roll two evades. That's a nothing result. That's what's supposed to happen. It's all about objectivity. It's all about being able to look at these windows of variance. The problem is that luck is worth more than later luck. To wipe a ship off the board in the engagement round, it doesn't really, through luck, it doesn't really matter. Get pretty lucky later to the point where you've rolled the same percentage of hits as is expected, or the same percentage of evades as is expected. The damage has already been done. So that's all I wanted to say about variance, is just don't be disrespectful to your opponent. Don't imply that they suck. But there's nothing wrong with recognizing that variance is part of X-Wing, and it is a good and necessary part of X-Wing if we want a healthy number of players in the game.
The one thing I do want to touch down upon, too, is that when stuff like this happens with people and, you know, emotions fly and flare up, the one thing that I mentioned to them, too, is, I mean, we've been, you know, Jeff, you and I have been there in 1.0 when there was no variance. Like, you just roll evade dice to roll evade dice because you're, you know, you have to roll evade dice.
You
pick up your ship. Like, you know, I tell people that we come from a time before where there was no variance. You don't want to be back there, boy. Like, You just, I mean, the variance is a part of the game, and it's healthy, even though, you know, it can make people upset. It's something that's going to happen, and it happens to everyone, you know?
Thank you, gentlemen, so much for joining me. Jeff, it was great to see you this weekend. Drew, it was lovely to meet your bride-to-be. Thank you, gentlemen.
Take care.
Bye, guys.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.